Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Pekka Veljakainen, co-author, No Fear, Business Leadership in the Age of Digital Cowboys. Pekka is also a globally renowned executive, thought leader, strategist, and entrepreneur. Pekka, you have just a remarkable series of international successes, so thank you for sharing your considerable expertise, deep accumulated insights and wisdom with our audience.
Yeah, thank you. It's wonderful to be here, and I'm happy to tell everything what I know about these minor issues, what you have in agenda.
Now, Pekka, I was talking to your co-author, Mark, and he indicated you expressed an interest in the IFIP World CIO Forum, or WCF. Now, from your own personal perspective, why should CIOs, senior executives, government and industry and academic leaders participate in the World CIO Forum?
Well, I think that in general, there used to be a feeling that all kind of this kind of gatherings are more like a corporate entertainment and places where executives can kind of mingle. But I think that the world has changed to the direction that you sincerely need to understand what is happening in other parts of the world, but also in other business domains, and because it's all about, leadership is all about learning, and exceptional leadership is to learning faster than others. So I think that the gatherings like World Chief Information Officer Forum is place where you can build your own network, but also learn something exceptional. And I think that joining to this kind of event is not good enough, but really share what you have learned and then learn like a monkey from the others.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, and I know that you do share through the many speeches and the keynotes that you give and also by co-authoring this book. So it's just a remarkable contribution you're making. Now, in addition to that, then, how do you feel the World CIO Forum will take its participants, IT executives, and the industry in general to the next level?
Well, I was yesterday actually participating in an event where was 100 chief information officer here in Europe was present. And I think that everyone who left from that one-day session, they had something to share with their chief executives and the leadership teams. In other words, it's not good enough just to run the business and your IT. It used to be so that chief information officers was kind of their the main objective was to reduce costs and to get operations running. But now it's clearly to support business and business decisions. And I said yesterday in an open forum that you need to know 12 months in advance what is happening in the business, what business really needs. And if you get some of the hints, some of the tips from the others in venues like this, you are automatically lifted to the new level.
Well, that's excellent. Now, let's shift a bit of direction here in this interview and talk about your current roles and past roles. Now, Pekka, you are a very, very successful entrepreneur, quite famous, in fact, for entrepreneurship. So what success tips can you share from your past history of starting a company, growing the company, and then having the company acquired?
Yeah, well, first of all, I start from the latter part. I have never designed my business to be sold and to be acquired. So I think that those businesses and those entrepreneurs whose ultimate goal is only to streamline everything and then get rid of it, I don't, frankly speaking, believe on that. So you have to have your full heart and your full soul to what you are doing. And then eventually, if something like that happens, that's just, it happens, but it can never be the ultimate goal. Then I think that the deep standpoint, I've always said that I'm not very smart, actually, but I work like hell. So I openly tell when I don't understand, and I openly say, and I explain things which I have learned, and as an exchange, I get a hell of a lot of information from the customers, from my global network, and so forth. So hard working and the willingness to learn and willingness to question your own decisions is something which has actually given me kind of accelerated speed as an entrepreneur. Then I think one element which is very easily forgotten is that everything in this world becomes global. So we can talk about China phenomena or we can talk about India phenomena and on IT. But every single business model, every single leader, every single support process, whatever you do, should be globally competitive. And that has always been, interesting. What is interested about what is happening around the world. And then made my local modification for first 25 years ago in eastern part of Finland, then Finland, Nordics, Europe, and then ultimately all over the world. So that's the right approach to the globalization and how to run international business is everything.
Now, can you describe your time at your just immediate past company and some of the roles that you played with that company, and then what lessons you can share from this experience?
Well, it's pretty much the same what I said about becoming international, becoming global. That first of all, you can't copy leadership from country to other country. You have to educate and coach your team in all the countries. And I'm not saying this kind of a macro examples like having US type of leadership style exported to China or the way things are done in Germany exported to some other. I'm talking about the fundamental learning curve and of an executive to really express your own value and then deliver it to the other countries. Where I have really failed in the past years was that I was always underestimating these differences of the cultures, and I was even a little bit afraid of the things. I was afraid how I will be viewed, whether I can add value. But perhaps that's the good bridge to my book, No Fear, because that's pretty much the only approach how I can see executives can going forward. I have said that the only thing in the world what I'm afraid of is my mother, and that's all.
Well, that's interesting, and you have this sort of nickname, the bulldozer, and it's because you just work so hard, you deliver results, you worked inside international organizations, and you've held these leadership roles. Now, can you share some additional leadership success stories from your own personal journey?
Well, I think that if you think my starting point as a 13-year-old nerd who was living in the middle of forest close to the Russian border here in Finland, and then ultimately ending to run 18,000 people in 26 countries, I think that as such is quite okay progress. I think that the leadership success as such is to come from the, how to say, local hero level to the national level, and then to expand and really show the value to the younger leaders and the whole network in a global scale. I think that's the biggest achievement for me. I was born as a nerd, and then this leadership came as a kind of a mandatory thing, and it was a tough school for me, but ultimately I managed relatively well, I think.
So I guess that journey then led you to go into this book. So can you maybe get into more detail what specific reasons led you to write your current book and the reasons behind its title, No Fear, Business yeah. Leadership in the Age of Digital Cowboys?
Yeah. My plan was never to be an author, a writer. I'm a business executive. And to be very brutal, my first idea was to crystallize my leadership philosophy and what I have learned in the past 25 years in a pile of copy papers, so to say. So perhaps 10 pages or 15 pages. And I ultimately was thinking that, well, I still have 30 years before my official retirement age, so I will anyway recruit between 1 to 100,000 people, most likely much more than one, and most likely less than 100,000 people. And I wanted to give my philosophy in a paper. But then when I went through all the notes, everything, all the coaching sessions, everything what I learned, it was actually quite a big pack of things and interconnected issues. It ended up to be then a book. And the No Fear is the title as such. It's very clearly stating the basic idea, what I'm saying. The fear of executives to losing their face is actually the biggest, single biggest factor for companies to grow and to grow their next level of leaders and the leadership. Because executives are so careful with their corporate politics and their face and not to admit their mistakes that actually it might work 10 years ago or it can even work today. But actually, when the guys and girls born after 85, I call them PlayStation generation, are entering to the labor market, it doesn't work anymore because they are questioning and they are transparent. And if the executives try to hide, if they are not in the front line riding with the cowboys, they don't believe on that. And that's the reason why I wanted to crystallize it in a title. And that's the actual, the kind of the red line inside the book, all in all.
Now, why did you write this book with your co-author, Mark Mueller Eberstein?
Well, first of all, Mark is a great example of an executive having a kind of a background, originally coming from Germany, but then worked in U.S. 10-plus years. And he's, I read his former book, Agility, and I thought that he would be a good teammate for me to give a little bit different flavor from the U.S. standpoint, but also to have a kind of a U.S.-based mega enterprise view, because he worked at Microsoft and so forth. So that was the reason. I think that it was a good match between our competencies and our backgrounds, and it was nice to have a kind of a heavy debate about my views and then combine with the Mark's insights.
Now, this book is very fascinating, and both of you bring this remarkable history to this book, and you have this tremendous vision of the world because of your long experience internationally. So can you describe a few of the chapters in your book and what value they deliver to readers?
Well, I think that the basic phenomena, what all is related to, I think everybody can see it around them. But still, we want it to be, from the beginning, to explain what is the combination of globalization, new PlayStation generation, and the rapid change of technology. I mean, what it means from the corporate strategy standpoint, from the leadership standpoint, and also in a wider scale for the society. Because it was just an accident. It was not the timing that for example, the uprising of the Libya or whole Arabic countries started at the same time, and it's actually driven by the same things, young generation, technology, globalization, and so forth. So this main topic is kind of visible for all. Then, of course, the core of the book is what it means for executives in their own behavior standpoint, what they have to change in their own behavior and how it's possible to do. And then the third element is what does it mean from the corporate structure, corporate strategy standpoint, which is then the next level. So it's like from the executive point, enterprise view, and then wider, what is the next phase, next level of this whole development? I think that's describing quite well the chapters of the book.
So why would then readers find relevance in the book?
Well, I think that after having kind of a lot of interviews around the world, I traveled in more than 45 countries to make interviews and talk with the people and executives in general. They are kind of weaponless with this situation. They see the change now after the recession and the global recession. All the chief executives are asking, where is the next growth? And suddenly the key talent pool is this PlayStation generation. So there are a lot of people who are searching for answers and kind of a tangible, concrete things, what to do and how to change my own behavior. I think that the relevance is that time is now. Like I said, this is happening all over the world, not only in Arabic countries, not in U.S., not in Europe. It's happening everywhere. And the growth is starting now in economy all over the world. And there is also the third element, I'm referring a lot about how the leadership should be evolving in the emerging markets like China, Russia, Latin America. And if I'm just checking top 100 companies in the world and thinking where they are planning to grow, it's all happening in emerging markets. So I think that these three elements are the answer for your question about the relevance.
Now, you have personal relationships with many of the invited global leaders who are actively participating in the book. Now, can you describe your journey with some of the leaders and the dialogue they will spark?
Well, I have worked, or I have been privileged to work with the super international team. I started in a very, very small scale, in a very small project 20, 25 years ago. And I have built the personal relations with the many of these executives in the enterprises, as well as some politicians in the big countries. And first, when I started to contact them, I was a little bit afraid that how they will see this whole no fear, and if they are willing to join, and do they see the relevance of it. But actually, I was absolutely surprised that the hit rate has been so far close to 100%. So it has been very easy to start the dialogue because, like I said, in all the countries, in like all companies, all over the world, this is so, so visible thing. So I think all of these executives, those who are in a part of the book, but also those who are in a No Fear community video interviews during coming months, what we will release, some 20, 30 things, they are quite amazing people, and they are quite openly sharing their concerns, but also their best practices, what they have done to tackle these issues mentioned in the No Fear book. So I would say it's an exceptionally open dialogue with these executives, and I'm sincerely grateful for that cooperation.
So in your dialogues and all of your travels over 40 countries, and working with this book and so on, can you describe something perhaps unique that you discovered in this research and then writing the book?
I think that the one extremely important point what I found out was that something is happening in this world where this new generation, because of the kind of 2.0 internet revolution, is actually behaving quite same way all over the world. So in other words, 10 years back, you could see the difference, the young generation, young talent coming, and there was a difference whether I was talking with them in New York, Los Angeles, Beijing, or Moscow. But now you can go to the Starbucks in all of those cities, and the difference is actually small. It's much smaller than their parents. And I think that one thing what I really found out is, and or I've had a hint of it earlier, is that if you build your tactics, if you build your strategy right, if you build your leadership in a right way, you can really expand your business globally. And that's why I don't want to be the evangelist of the globalization as such, but I think that this has really opened my eyes about the possibilities, growth possibilities, and new business opportunities in all over the world. That's definitely a thing. And then secondly, the other side of the coin is that all the countries, all the executives are suffering of that same fear. So it's not only in emerging countries, or it's not in Europe or US, everywhere is the same thing. How they are able to monetize this change, how they can open their own knowledge, and also their own fears openly in their corporate networks, and how they can start dialogue with these young talent pools. I think that there are a lot of similarities, and that has been really kind of a refreshing, view to the whole world, and also encouraging what comes to the message of no fear.
Now, in all the chapters of your book, you have specific lessons, actions, things that executives can do. Can you share some of these lessons from your book?
Well, I think that the biggest thing, there are a lot of those, but I have been a big fan of the leadership philosophy. I think it was originally from MIT study about amplify, simplify. philosophy, meaning that originally all the big changes in the companies was happening like a top-down change, that you made a strategy, you had a PowerPoint slide deck, and then you roll it down all the way from chief executive to the last corner of the company. And it really seems that while handling these new talents and being in a social media world, so to say, it's practically impossible to do these changes like that. So in other words, you have to have a very frontline oriented management team and managers who are actually finding out the right elements from the very front line of the business and then simplifying those to the very extreme before pushing them down all the way to the organization. So the change management and the change of the change management is I think one of the key findings and the lessons what I'm going to handle in the book. And then secondly, the advice is to really think about, as a leader, what is my role going forward? If you have been a kind of a manager or management-oriented guy or girl with the left side of the brain activity that you control, you pay bonuses, and then you wait for exceptional performance, and that's your tactics only. You really have to change your way of working to be more like a producer, where you are producing things and you are not only the top of the line organization, but you have to take the ways of working as a producer and really get the different talents, different age, and different nationalities to work together. And many of the elements of the book are around these themes.
You know, it's interesting that one of the kind of models that you talk about in the book is sort of the helicopter model. Does that come from your own personal flying experience?
No. This helicopter, helicopter view is related from the business. Yes, I'm a helicopter pilot by myself, but I was kind of irritated because the helicopter view for executives is viewed in a way that you are flying high and you have to see all the details from the high altitude. So you are never close enough to see the details, but you see the big picture. Well, if that would be the case, it would be known as fixed wing view, because the helicopter view is all about the press with your left hand collective down, and you are very quickly in the details. You solve the issues if there is something is burning under you, and when you have solved the issue, you put the collective up, and you are in a high altitude. So I think that this helicopter attitude and approach is something what you really have to have while you are dealing in a future problems and with the new talents. If you never come down to solve the issues, you are not a credible leader. You don't have your authentic way of doing things. You don't have the view what is really happening there in the roots of the business.
Now, earlier in the interview, you indicated that you've done a lot of traveling and this traveling continues. So can you describe your current and future work and how you plan to integrate your work with the promotion of the book?
Well, today we have not, and I have not decided what will be the next career step. I have said that I'm kind of retired, but this will be kind of a partial retirement. So perhaps after the summer, this 2011, I will decide what to do next. The promotion of the book is handled in all the countries, over 100 countries, and I'm supporting that. Like I said, for me, this book project is to share what I know, that's why promotion for me is to participate on the events around the world to tell the message, that's important for me. Traveling is, or it has been, and it will be part of my life. It's not all of my life, but important part, because you cannot develop yourself as an executive if you stay home. That's clearly my message.
Now, with your considerable international experience and the fact that you do have this global network of senior leaders in all different kinds of careers, and you get a really unique perspective of the world, then can you provide some of your predictions for the future?
Well, I think it's a kind of a summary of what I've already said. The globalization will accelerate in all businesses. It means that leaders who are local heroes in Europe or who are local heroes in US or even in one state, they simply cannot solve the business problems of the coming years. They simply have to open up their mind and they have to understand in depth what is happening in leadership, what is happening in business around the world. Thirdly, I would say that we haven't seen even the smallest part of the technology innovations which are just behind a corner. Once in a while you hear questions that, hey, is everything already invented? We have a Facebook, we have a Google, we have a internet telephony, we have everything. Is this all? No. If we do this interview 10 years after, there is even more of the new innovation. So the technology will drive the change. Fourthly and fifthly, if I combine these things, we will not talk about globalization and emerging markets anymore, that it's a possibility for a low-cost labor or so forth. The market, the business will move to those countries. There is a lot of money. There is a lot of talent. And in reality, those countries, whereas most of the talent, will win the economic race. So that's why for many Western companies in Europe, US, it's the kind of the only way going forward to build the business with those teams, those countries, those talents. There is absolutely no other reverse plan or no other ways to be truly successful enterprise, for example, 2020.
Now, in all of your travels and in all of the work that you do, you must get some really interesting questions. So can you share some of those questions and your answers to those questions?
Well, this could be another book to answer all this. But, most of the questions are very practical. And my learnings about what I have changed in my leadership, what I have changed, for example, to tackle the business ethic differences or legislation differences between the countries. There are a lot of questions about Russia, because I happen to know the business culture there very well. But there are also a lot of fears, and people are kind of asking from me my kind of judgment or my view about country risks or security issues and all that kind of things. But I think that I have covered those quite well in a No Fear book. I have really tried to share all those in a very open manner to the readers. So I would say with a very transparent way.
Now, on this next question, I want you to share what you would recommend as the best resources to support professionals in their work and their development. And obviously, the top one would be this new book, and that is No Fear, Business Leadership in the Age of Digital Cowboys, and also the new community that you've set up so that people can engage and talk to each other, the new, nofearcommunity.com. But what are some other resources you'd recommend?
For me, it has been extremely important to have a very open and natural dialogue with my enterprise customers. And actually, sometimes business people are very hesitant or, in other words, very focused to talk with their own products, talk about their immediate business issues. For me, it has been very, very important to have an open dialogue and challenge customers around the world and their executives. I have learned most from them. Secondly, I would say that these major business schools have done a remarkable step that instead of preaching old truths or books published 10 years back, they have actually become a major hub for sharing information in their social media way. So in other words, MIT, Harvard Business School, IMD at Lausanne, I'm regularly using all the information sources from them. And then lastly, when I was working in a big enterprise, I was sharing a lot of my material and all my views in our internal social media, even those which I knew which were not 100% right and there were mistakes and so forth. But it was wonderful to get 18,000 colleagues to tick and actually all the time correct my mistakes. They were not searching for answers. They were actually searching mistakes on me as an executive. And I learned a hell of a lot about the things and their findings, and this kind of a positive spiral of learning and sharing is something which everybody should have in their network. I know that it's not everybody having a possibility to have a close to 20,000 colleagues, but you have some of the colleagues, and the more you share, more you add value to others, the more you get for yourself. That's my clear learning so far in my career.
And I guess really, you know, there's going to be this continued sort of learning coming from all the dialogue that's occurring in this nofear-community.com, where you're really inviting an exchange.
Sure. This community is not, it's nothing to do, it's not business community, so to say. It's a charity project. And its possibility to link all kind of sources all over the world to the No Fear community. So it's one small part of this whole story, even though I believe that tens of thousands of readers of the book, No Fear book, will automatically share quite a lot of insights there and the links in the wild world networks. So, yeah, there is a lot, and I actually want to challenge all the listeners of this call and interview and readers of the book to share their best practices and also their major mistakes, because actually I have learned most of my things of major mistakes, and then the best practices are just exceptional things and nice things to happen.
You know, it's interesting, Pekka, that you mentioned the mistakes and the fact that you're very open about it and you learn so much. So my next question is, what challenges were you not able to overcome at the time, and how would you do things differently now?
I was quite young when I started my business, and I must clearly say that I never understood the fact how important for a leader is to be a coach. And coach is not to hold somebody's hand and have a coffee break some once in a while and develop a discussion. It's actually a very systematic and also sometimes brutal process and a way of working to develop people and tell the feedback, very honest, very, very direct, sometimes even nasty feedback to the people. I was kind of weak on that. I mean, if I check my 20 years back, and that kind of softness will not lead anything good to happen, that's why I'm not saying that you should be harder and harder and more brutal, so to say, but what comes to the people development and the focus on getting your team stronger as individuals and then as a team, there is nothing which is more important for a leader, and to make that happen, you cannot outsource that for some HR unit or some even for external consultants. If the leader is reluctant to do that, he should not be a leader.
So I guess, you know, facing those hard questions and ensuring that you're kind of very direct and honest with your team to help in their development.
Pretty much so. That's a good summary.
And I guess, and it sort of ties back to this concept of a producer in your book too, right? So.
Yeah, it is so. I mean, manager can be easily somebody in the ivory tower. Producer, it can never be that. I'm actually using as a one metaphor or as an example case what I learned in some 10 years back in one business school about Leonard Bernstein when he was building a West Side Story in the 50s with the massively big team with the different individuals, different nationalities, different professions, and everybody was saying that you will never succeed on that. Well, West Side Story is quite a big masterpiece. And if you would not be completely fearless and clear with your own view, and then you would like to get the best out from your people, I think that West Side Story would never be born, so to say.
Now, you know, people are going to through this process, and there's already many out there who look up to you and you inspire them. But let's turn that around. In your past and currently and in the future, who inspires you and why is this so?
I think that the most important people who has impacted me are mainly coming from the customer side or my business partner side. I have worked with the big technology companies, the biggest ones, and the big banks and so forth. And there are individuals in all levels of organization who have actually helped me. And I cannot make a list of top five or top three, those who have inspired me, because there is no formula you can copy. You have to make your own formula, but you can get extremely important fractions of that knowledge from different sources. And but like I said, I'm crystal clear with that I have been and I will be learning like a monkey and finding the best practices, and I work hard to test my own views. And it might be an executive with whom I'm working. It might be even a colleague. I mean, 7 organizational or 11 organizational layers under me who gives that golden opinion and inspires me a lot. But my role is to be in the center of my own network and share my knowledge with them. And these transactions are actually, and this transaction of information is inspiring as such.
Now, and from a broader perspective, if you could choose the topic area, what do you see as the top challenges facing us today, and what are maybe some solutions that you would propose?
Number one is that world is open for complete transparency and competition. Nothing can be hidden inside an enterprise. Nothing can or should be hidden in a societies. And it means that you have to have a very solid way of working, and you have to be crystal clear what you want and how you want your team to work. It's a challenging, it sounds graceful, but it's a challenging for many companies, and many societies also, many countries. And to solve that, my proposal is to really see whether you are a government or whether you are a public sector organization or enterprise. What are those things where you will simplify things, what you will amplify, where you put your energy, what are really important, what is really the core of your own way, either as a leader or part of your strategy, and put all the focus on that. And the globalization, once again, I'm coming back all the time to that. If your business model, if your way of working is not globally competitive, rethink it. Because now you have all the sources of information available, and get the best practices and openly combine those with your own domain knowledge. Then you can make a lot of money, and you are able to grow as a leader.
Now, we discussed a lot of different kinds of topic areas in this interview, but let's turn the tables, and this is my last question. If you were doing this interview, what questions would you have asked, and what would be your answers?
Well, you have had a marvelous set of questions here. Well, perhaps I would ask, is there something in a No Fear book or this whole project, what I would do differently, what I see as a mistake even before the kind of a publishing it? And I think that the answer for that question is that I'm not saying in the introduction that I have a complete solution for all these problems or questions. But I'm 100% sure, and all the co-writers and the team behind the book is absolutely clear about the future. The phenomena as such. And perhaps now what I would do differently in the book, you could even more go deeper and deeper for the certain business segments. For example, you could go, for example, technology industry, you could go retail industry, because there are kind of a typical thing for those different industries. But actually, I must also say that I didn't want to do that, because the impact for businesses and organizations is so wide that by having very narrow industries there as an example might actually tell to the readers that, okay, this is not my issue, or this is not relevant for me. So we decided actually to have a much open view as a general leadership book and the business book, and not to focus on any narrow things. There is also questions whether we will go to the No Fear 2.0 to go deeper into certain elements. And the answer is no. I want that this will facilitate the dialogue, and we have a nofearcommunity.com to actually share the knowledge. And I want that, and I really hope that this will accelerate the discussion and the dialogue in the coming months and years, where the global reader society from more than 100 countries can actually contribute, and that will be the NoFear 2.0, not written by me, but actually written by the readers of the book.
Well, that's crowdsourcing to the nth degree, right? So, and I guess the network effect, you know, the value derived is the square of the number of nodes. So the more people you get involved, it just increases the value exponentially. I mean, it's just a great project, a great book, and a tremendous contribution, Pekka, that you've made to the history of the world, to businesses, to society, and just to thought leadership. Just excellent. And thank you for coming in today. And we'll continue to follow your extensive history of successes, and we are really indeed fortunate you came in to do this interview, and I know your schedule is very, very tight, so thank you again.
Thank you, sir. This was a great honor to be part of the interview. Thank you.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Pekka Viljakainen, co-author, No Fear, Business Leadership in the Age of Digital Cowboys. Pekka is also a globally renowned executive, thought leader, strategist, and entrepreneur.